Wow.
Yeah. It's easy. Okay, it is Monday, August 15, 2016. Calling to order the meeting of the City of Ocala Firefighters Retirement Plan. It is 9:03. Board members present are Griffin, Justin Hardy, John Dozier. At this point, Jim Williams and Larry Fagan are not here. Also in attendance are Cindy Kelly, Dave West, Alicia Gaither, and Jessica Peller. Sorry, Jessica.
You need more coffee, Anne.
Yeah. Okay. Public comments. There's no public here to comment. So with that, I'm going to turn the floor over to you, Dave, and you can continue on with what we were just talking about and go over the report. We've got plenty of time today. Not anything else.
That might be the quickest introduction to Dave ever.
Yeah, and it's probably going to be the shortest meeting we've ever had as well.
Yeah, all right.
I can deal with that.
All right. Oh, I can stretch it out. Come on. Before we go into the book, it's good news to report. But before we go into the book, we've probably added another 3.5%. Being conservative to the return since the June 30 print. The gentlemen are aware the markets have been extremely positive.
And it's been performance driven.
I'm sorry?
The 3.5% has been performance driven.
Right. Total return, right. All in addition. And there's been a couple of things going on that are very interesting. We were talking about basically the climbing the wall of worry. This has been the most pessimistically driven bull market ever. And watch the next concern that's going to come out. If you run this entire bull market going back to the peak of just before the tech wreck, and length of the market rally, we have 84 days left. Right? When we hang out to the previous rally. And there are interesting similarities to this period versus that period, but not too similar. But the main issue is there's been a leadership team and a group of stocks that have really driven this market. And obviously during the tech cycle, it was technology stocks, and as they grew, they become a disproportionate amount of the cap-weighted S&P 500 index, right? So what happened, what drove things this go-around was not really, it wasn't economics or profitability. Like, tech stocks were outrageously profitable, and then, of course, we were buying companies without earnings, ultimately, but the whole sector was massively profitable. This go around, there really has not been a economically driven motivation for the market to rally. There's been so much pessimism. So why are we here? You know, you get to stop and sit back and, okay, how did I get here? And the theme this go around has been income, because interest rates are so nosebleed low, investors have been flocking to dividend paying stocks. So if you look at the underlying composition of the S&P 500, it's utilities and telco companies, and to a certain extent, consumer durables, the toothpaste people, that have led this whole rally. In fact, if you go back, like, it's almost like a year over year, that group has been up some 20%. And the whole rest, all the other sectors in the S&P 500 have actually been in a bear market. So this is a bull market, but it's a cloaked bull market because it's only been driven by dividend paying stocks. So all the other areas have lagged. So this has caused another phenomenon, which we have all been painfully dealing with, and that's the fact that in that type of environment, indexing prevails. It's been very, very challenging for active managers who, whether they're a value manager or a growth manager, they're looking for either an earnings catalyst, you know, economically to drive the company, or if they're a growth manager, they're looking for superior earnings momentum growth. And you're not going to find a manager buying utility stocks or telco stocks. It's just not what they do. And that's where the leadership has been. So it's been a really, really tough environment for active management up until hopefully the most recent turn since this print. Now the cyclical stocks are starting to lead, and the income-producing stocks are lagging. So with that theme shift, assuming that carries forward, hopefully at least through the fiscal year, right, we should see a change and improvement in the active management. And again, we only have two active managers here. Fortunately, we are predominantly indexed, so we didn't have a whole lot of manager risk to deal with here. But Dalton Grenier, our all-cap value manager, you know, is lagging. The Euro-Pacific Fund, as was the previous Manning & Napier Red International Equity Manager, was lagging. And so we're already seeing a shift with those managers starting to outperform the benchmark, given the change in the flavor of what's in vogue, if you will, in the equity markets. So just taking a quick look at page 4, this kind of summarizes the environment. Look at the top right chart there. In this case, we're looking at the Russell 1000 domestic equity benchmark. And you know, we break it down into all the major sectors or investment areas, but bring your eyes down to the bottom two line items there, telco services and utilities. For the June quarter, they were up 7.3, 7.1 on a year-over-year basis. They were up 23, and utilities were up 31%. My gosh. And then go up to consumer staples, the toothpaste makers, I call them up 17% year-over-year. And then look at everything else in the middle there, energy, financials, healthcare, industrials, IT, materials, vast majority of them negative returns. And unless you pull the lid off and, you know, looked under the hood, you know, we're setting record highs in the equity market, but these sectors are just absolutely not participating. So there's still value. They make the argument, okay, the market's overvalued now, but there's still a lot of value within the marketplace because a vast majority of these stocks in these sectors have not participated yet. So if we can shift gears, change themes, there's the potential for the momentum, you know, to continue to carry this market going. Hopefully we shift from pessimism to optimism, which is usually what closes out a market cycle, but we should be able to get some continued very positive returns if we can make that shift. So, you know, a little bit out of the ordinary discussion here, but it's important to know, you know, what's been driving the market and the investment returns here. So in our usual form, back up to page 2, top right chart there. For the June quarter anyway, if you take a look at the MSCI EAFE, which is our average stock return for the foreign country developed stock, that was down 1.5. Emerging markets with oil commodities bottoming squeaked out a positive 0.7. The S&P 500 was up 2.5%. And remember, this is the Brexit quarter, right? So on June 23rd, the markets, I mean, the bottom line is we survived it, right? At least for this quarter, but I think the market's up almost 10% since the Brexit vote. But in 3 days, the global equity markets erased $3 trillion in value during that sharp global sell-off. Unbelievable. And up to the Brexit vote, you know, the S&P, all the major market indexes had very, very high return. We were going to have a phenomenal quarter, but then the vote came and, you know, the end of the quarter was pretty disastrous. The S&P hung on to 2.5%, small mid-cap stocks hung on to, 3+%. Again, another surprise, interest rates came crashing down, especially global interest rates, so our bond prices went up, right? So we had a little mini rally in the U.S. aggregate bond market, up 2.2%. And the other thing that happened, the Barclays Global IG, remember that's the corporate bond, investment-grade corporate bond index, that screamed, that was up 3.6%. This go-around, people, during this sell-off, people, it wasn't necessarily a complete flight to quality like the other previous corrections. People were comfortable piling into investment-grade credit. Again, with interest rates coming down so low, people reaching for yield. So obviously the corporate bond sector provides higher yield, so investors flock in there. This is the, when we go through the numbers, you'll see that the PIMCO Diversified Income Fund benefited massively from this big market move because they were all over it. So we got nice returns out of that fund.
Are they the ones that do the currency?
No, that's another, that requires a line item discussion. Yeah, because currency volatility was huge and went counter to the long-term currency play that the Templeton Global Bond Fund had in place. So those numbers, that's one of the only managers with numbers that don't look good. So while we're on that one, we're re-examining the application for this fund. Remember when we initially introduced it, we were looking for a way to diversify away from the U.S. Bond market, but stay in bond securities. So this fund offers foreign bonds, basically sovereign debt, which would be U.S. Treasury equivalents, right, from high-rated foreign countries. And we would collect the income off those bonds. The bond manager is kind of neutralizing, if you will, the sensitivity to changes in interest rates in the portfolio. So it didn't matter if interest rates went up at the time, that was the concern, right? Yeah. And or if they went down, bond prices, the way the portfolio was set up, weren't going to change much based on changes on interest rates. So we were just going to collect the coupon, and then we would have a very active currency overlay strategy, which was going to actually generate most of the return, which historically has been the case. So what happened was there's a currency play on with the yen. The fund is massively short the euro, and a couple other currency plays with the Brazilian real one, the Mexican peso was another one, and all the movement of those currencies during this particular period of time was the exact opposite. And then the other problem obviously was that interest rates came crashing down, and the bond benchmark that we're using is sensitive to changes in interest rates, right, to this the government, foreign government bond index period. And so that index had huge appreciation, and this fund with no changes to interest rates in the fund didn't move at all, barely from those changes. So it lagged the benchmark quite a bit. So candidly, this fund has been more volatile in its absolute level of return variability than we anticipated. And also, candidly, we did not anticipate that currency markets would be this volatile. The last year and a half, last couple of years, currency volatility is at unprecedentedly high levels. So we're going back in and re-examining maybe the risk-reward suitability of the fund, because it was really designed to be as low of volatility and as boring a fund as possible, and just the wild swings in currency has just made this return stream go all over the place. So, and that wasn't the intent. So, I'll come back to you next quarter probably with what we're gonna continue on or you know, if we get maybe alternative strategies that we think might be more, but we're meeting with the portfolio team and everything from Templeton to kind of take a look at that. So a long-winded answer to your question, but covered one of the items I needed to go through. So, all right, so let's jump into returns.
What we're talking about, Mark, is what do you, what is you or the firm's opinion on the election here?
That's a loaded question.
Easy.
I mean, is it, do you see big changes, or do you think
as far as market impact?
Yes.
So what? We're in the fortunate position of working with all these smart people, all these money managers, right? Reading all these opinions and white papers. So, and putting it all together, I think by and large, most opinions are the economy, presidential elections, historically anyway, have not really impacted markets.
Right.
The markets are going to go where they're going to go because the economy is already going where it's going to go. And whether you're Obama jumping into a crisis or if you're someone else, you know, who's at the helm of the president really doesn't matter. This go-around appears to be having more of an impact because of the extreme differences and likely differences, you know, once the more of the Republican platform gets absorbed, and it's starting to come out more with the tax reduction and more business-friendly investing environment, which has been quite counter, obviously, and we've had a pretty negative experience with, you know, policy-wise with the current administration. So it could be positive, it could be, you know, it's just too unpredictable, and obviously the other wild card is if it actually makes it the whole way, you know, it's just, it's too hard to predict. But meanwhile, as has happened in the past, you've got all these foreign central banks, you know, with monetary policy, you know, dumping money into their economies, and they are slowly starting to turn. You've got fiscal policy, I should say fiscal policy is where you're dumping money into the economy, monetary policy, you're bringing down your interest rates, you've got negative real rates now in a lot of places. So there's so much stimulus going on. Meanwhile, the U.S. economy has nice momentum. You know, employment numbers, I think the unemployment rate, what left a couple of Fridays ago, was down to 4.7, I think. Yeah, and 255 on the payroll, June was revised up. So we're at the point now where hopefully we start to see some wage pressures. To your point earlier, there's a disconnect now in the labor pool training versus the job opening, which, you know, hopefully puts some wage pressure on upper income earning type of jobs or higher income earning jobs. So what we're really waiting for is to see that uptick in wage inflation, and then the Fed's likely to come in and start increasing rates, which will be I think will be a positive thing. That would be great news for financial stocks,
right.
And great news for retirees. And then people are going to be less interested in the dividend-paying stocks. They're going to go back in the bonds, and we can return to some sort of normal existence. And the other good sign will be that the economy, if that happens, if that stays, and the baton will have successfully been passed, in that the markets are driven by the easy money and the low rates right now. So now they'll be driven by fundamentals, right? And you know, then we can have a healthier, more optimistic market. And now that's going to go on regardless of who is at the helm. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you a more specific question. If we have a Democratic president and a Democratic Congress, what is the outlook from all the smart people that read the white papers?
So then the outlook is it's definitely going to have a muted effect on economic growth. Because that will be more of the same, and actually that will be probably more of the same, which has been a very challenging operating environment for businesses. It's been very tax challenged, and has not been conducive to capital investment, which is the big laggard in this whole cycle. And we'll never see any of those, the $1 billion of Apple profits sitting overseas repatriated back here for reinvestment. So bottom line, that would definitely have a muting effect, or continue to have a muting effect on economic growth.
Have you seen anything or heard anything through your research about the probability of that happening?
Of election outcomes?
Uh-huh.
Are you talking about both houses, or just uh-huh. the House, or just the Senate?
Talking about Congress.
Yeah. Both House and the House and the Senate going Democratic.
I think we're following the same, probably following the same sourcing, the same polls, and those are changing and moving. I don't think that there's a clear prediction, a clear bankable prediction at this juncture.
Yeah, I was just thinking about what the probability might be relative to. We're in a Republican-controlled House and Senate with a Democratic president, as opposed to the first 2 years of Obama's presidency, which was a Democratic president and a Democratically-controlled Senate.
Right.
And, a lot of what happened was a hangover from the financial crisis.
Right.
We don't have that hangover currently. It's pretty much resolved.
Yeah, we're sure.
So, I'm just curious if any of the think tanks have given a probability of what the world might look like if, in fact, the Republicans, the counterbalance to the Democratic side of the equation, lose the Senate.
Yeah, and I think if that's the case, then that's definitely not constructive for continued equity appreciation, because that's going to, at this juncture, we need earnings to start to increase again. Yeah. We've had flat earnings for quite a while now. Definitely not going to be conducive to a positive business operating environment, which bottom line is not going to be good. Is that what you're seeing in your travels and research?
That's pretty much what I feel like, yeah.
Yeah. So, let's see, on page 20 then, the quarter, top line, fund was up 2%, about in line with the policy. So fiscal year to date, great shape, 6.69%. And as I said, I think we can add another 3% or so, since this print. And we're trailing the benchmark a little bit, and that's primarily due to the active equity during this period, but I think that's subsequently reversing. Our index came up at 7.73. Year over year, 174 versus 285. The 3 year we're annualizing at 7. And the 5 year we're annualizing at 683. The number in parentheses, of course, is the peer group for the public fund universe. And you can see our return puts us in the top quartile, 24th percentile. 1 year, 21st, 3 year, 34th. And if we just drop the asset allocation that we're running here, well, with no fees, right, if we were 100% index, we would be in the 6th percentile, 5th percentile, and 13th percentile. And But we're in good shape, and it looks like the environment is turning so that we should see a return coming back out of the active management. So specifically, looking down, Dalton, all cap value to the quarter, up 399, fiscal year to date, trailing a little bit, up 987. Longer-term manager still struggling a little bit with some peer group rankings. Again, that we've discussed, you know, these are performance, you know, compliance violations from our policy standpoint. You know, we continue to monitor Dalton, but I would encourage, let's get through the fiscal year before we disrupt anything and see what shakes out. Our index funds, the Wells Fargo large cap value, obviously up completely in line with value stocks. And if you look at where the index itself ranked and the public fund, in the manager universe, 14th percentile, 17th, 14th. So over the last 5 years, the index itself has outperformed 91% of the active manager universe. Not good gambling odds. The Wells Fargo Growth Index Fund, up in line, obviously, with growth stocks, which didn't quite keep pace with value stocks, but up 873. Similar peer group rankings there. Again, just more evidence that the active management environment has been very challenged. Our small cap has made a nice contribution, up 8.29 as an index, another index fund representation. And then moving down to page 21.
Well, I just have a question on the Vanguard small cap. Is that the appropriate, didn't they change their index that Vanguard uses?
They did. Vanguard changed their whole family of indexing to potentially pass along some savings, and they went non-mainstream in their benchmarking.
Can we add that benchmark to the report?
Yes,
MSC.
Yeah, we can do
that. Small cap 1750. That way, we're well. I guess it is comparing that. I'm sure that it's only a few basis points off of whatever their index is.
Yeah, we should add that index there, and actually. You know, maybe at year end we do a periodic investment policy statement review. You know, maybe at that time we can look to, you know, officially changing it out to reflect the new index. For international equities, I said the Euro Pacific Fund was down about in line for the quarter, fiscal year to date. They're trailing 0.27 versus the benchmark of 261. Peer group rankings okay in a year over year. If we look at this all the way over to the right, we funded this one back on March 1st of 15. And since we put it in, it has outperformed the benchmark, losing less money than the index. So far that fund has been, you know, a solid investment. On the fixed income side, unfortunately, underweighted, I guess, but the allocations of Vanguard Inflation Protection Securities Fund up 555 fiscal year to date. Big surprise there. Integrity has been about in line or just slightly behind. He's taken a little more of a conservative position here, so he's lagged a little bit to the benchmark. But again, with the continued rally in corporate bonds, I think that underperformance margin is slowly closing. I actually checked in with Earl Denny, the portfolio manager there, this week. I was over at his shop, and all is well there. They're actually growing. They added a portfolio manager, and they were in line for the last 5 years for this. There's a outfit out in California that looks for undiscovered managers, and it's part of the CalPERS pension system. And they finally, after being surveyed for 5 years, they were finally accepted onto that platform. So they're being awarded new money as a result of that acceptance. So that's a huge event for any firm. So all is well there. Our global bond medley, as I said, the PIMCO Diversified Income Fund.
David, just want to stop you there. Now, do they use the Barclays, this INUS Broad Market Core Fix? What is their actual benchmark they're using? Is it the Barclays Aggregate?
So we have.
That we use for integrity?
Yeah, according to our. Yeah, according to our document, we've got them set up against the aggregate. Let me double check that. I want to check our manager's policy on that.
Okay.
I'll dive in while you're doing other business.
Okay.
And confirm that. I know we're going with
the
question.
There was one other index that when they send their quarterly report, there's a different index on there, I think. And I was just wondering if.
I'll double check that.
Comparing apples to apples.
Okay, so the PIMCO Diversified Income Fund up 8.5%. Really nice returns coming out of that one. So that's pulling up that period of underperformance. So since we funded this back on March of 11, we're almost back even to the benchmark. But, stellar peer group rankings there for that fund. And there's the Templeton Global Bond, down 0.3 versus the City World Government Bond Index. It was up 3.4. Look at the return of the index, 9.39. All function of interest rates crashing down and those government bond prices going up, and they just don't get the returns from that. So they were up 2.09, so they're lagging the index. Unfortunately, the peer group rankings also looking pretty rough. If you go back to the funding date for this one, 3/1/11, they're still ahead of the benchmark though, 2.29 versus 1.79, despite that difference to interest rate sensitivity. So, like I said, we've also beat the manager up a little bit for some response on index suitability. And it's a really challenging fund to come up with a fair benchmark for it. And they admit that.
Because it's always off, no matter what, if they're going good, they're going two or three times better, and when they're going bad, they're going two or three times worse.
They buy government sovereign bonds, and they can buy anything in that index. So that's all we can come up with. So we just have to qualify, what's behind the numbers, all the time. So, but I already shared our, the comments on that one. So on page 22, our real estate investments just continue to pound out very steady income with modest appreciation. So for the quarter, American Realty up 126, UBS 178, Intercontinental 121. Fiscal year to date, both managers that have been funded were up over a little over 7%. And for a year-over-year basis, those funds are annualizing out at basically 10.6%. Really nice returns coming out of very conservatively managed real estate funds. 3-year numbers over 12 and over 11%. And again, we talked about the peer group rankings. During periods of prosperity in real estate, high leveraged funds are going to do well. Low leveraged funds like these are going to lag. So, they're delivering the process exactly as
wasn't Intercontinental supposed to be a little less leveraged and more?
The opposite, right. Yeah, we put in Intercontinental for a more aggressive allocation.
Right.
And what happened during this quarter? Interest rates came crashing down. So they had to mark down the debt. If interest rates go up, then they mark up the value of the debt and they get appreciation out of it. But because interest rates came down this period, it had a negative effect on the valuation, which I think is where you were going with that. Yeah.
Now, are we still sitting in the queue with some funds for that, or is everything in?
Let's see. I think we're still in the queue for see, for Intercontinental, no, we're fully invested, and with $1 million in that fund. Yeah, we have no more queues. Any questions on the percentage return? Let's go to page 18 for cash flow. And if you follow with me on the bottom line there, the fund opened up at $47,751,283. We had contributions totaling $809,136. Distributions were $583. Investment management fees is invoiced and paid by the custodian, $17,685. Other administrative expenses for the period, $5,584. Investment earnings are broken down into income, where we earn $237,000 in income, and then appreciation, $714,000. So we took the snapshot June 30th with $48,905,777. So we're next report, hopefully we'll be showing 50 plus, and really nice.
I don't know how long ago, I think we started at 18, so that's good to see that number.
That's a milestone number.
Receive a check from the state, and I've been watching the website.
Yeah, any day.
Any day, so that'll need to be invested too.
Okay, I'm not going with
this. Not going there, that's going to form and change things. Hopefully.
So just dropping your eyes down to the bottom of page 19, that 6+% rate of return fiscal year to date, that is comprised of $934,000 in income and $2.1 million in appreciation. So right around $3 million net investment management fees going into the bucket pay that liability. So from an asset allocation, any questions on cash flow? Okay, on page 14. Last but not least, the asset allocation table, and maybe we can incorporate that contribution into this discussion. We're a little overweight and we're a little underweight, all the right places so far, a little over in domestic equity, a little under in international. We are materially underweight in domestic fixed income due to our material overweight in real estate, which has been a good thing. And we're a little under the global fixed income targets, which has been fine. So there's no streaming rebalancing to do at this time. When the contribution comes in, looking at this allocation, we would likely be moving it into the domestic fixed income because we're right at that minimum threshold. With a 5% underweight. So when that comes in, that will handily take care of any potential compliance issues, because we got to keep that minimum fixed income investment per the policy targets. So I recommend when the contribution comes in that we direct those funds to domestic fixed income, which would be the integrity. Which is always a hard one to do, but yeah, we gotta stay stay in line with the plan.
Stick to our allocation.
Yep. So I guess if everybody's good with that rebalancing recommendation when it comes in, based on a motion and approval, we'll go ahead and send that direction.
And then bring us something for the next meeting in reference to what you want to do with that Templeton fund.
Yeah, and we may stay, but I'll come back with a updated, complete opinion and basis from my research team. That's get really under the hood on this one.
It's what, $1 million?
I think that's right. Page 57
doesn't have a huge show.
Yeah, 926.
All right, any questions?
I just want to drag it out, I got more stuff I can talk about.
Did you need a motion on the rebalancing?
Yeah, on the rebalancing, yeah. I'd like to entertain a motion to take the state monies when they come in and put them toward our fixed income integrity fund in order to bring our asset allocation more into compliance with our policy.
So moved.
Okay, motion by John Dozier.
Second.
Second by Justin. Is there any opposition to a unanimous vote? Seeing and hearing none, the motion carries unanimous. All right. Any other questions for Dave?
So do you still see the bond yields going lower and lower? Or, I mean, do you think we're going to, at some point, maybe finally pull the trigger to raise rates? And what is going to be that catalyst?
Yeah, I think the most likely path is a gradual increase in rates in response to two things. Number one, the Fed finally, which is completely irrelevant at this juncture when they do it, but the Fed finally coming in and, you know, increasing, and it will be a slow and measured pace of Fed funds rate. And then the second will be, we may get the bond market, as inflation vigilantes may move in advance of that, you know, anticipating inflation starting to pick up, so the market itself may start to ease back on interest rates a little bit. Otherwise, you know, it looks like a pretty stable bond environment with both, you know, global growth continuing to slow, but hopefully filling in some of the holes and a slow but more evenly distributed growth across countries. But the U.S. appears to be fine. Well, he's getting conflicted. Obviously, we're getting a conflicted message from the Fed, which is, I think everyone way past what the Fed's going to be, though.
So do you think there'll be a reaction then?
Yes. I think the market's long baked in. At some point, they'll be coming in. I think all the short term, as you're well aware, the SEC changed the and we don't have to deal with this here. The SEC changed the rules and regs for money market funds. Right back in 2009, we all assumed that if we put a dollar in on money market funds, we were going to get a dollar out. And the only reason that happened was because the underlying money market fund companies were subsidizing any temporary dips in the actual market value of that, you know, 30, 90 day commercial paper that was in the money market funds. So the new rule is that non-US government investment money market funds have to mark to market. So if we get another, you know,
crazy time
like 2008 or 2009, you're gonna see 90 cents on the dollar, unless you're in a non-registered money market equivalent, which we are here through you know, through the bank custodian, right? Because they're exempted. Those money market structures for now are exempted. And or if you're in a government securities backed money market fund. So that's going to potentially cause some disruption. I think that the deadline for that is October 17th. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of custodians have been shuffling around in anticipation of that, which means there'll probably be a pretty good disruption around in and around conversion time if it isn't going to start to happen sooner in the commercial paper markets. is everybody's going to adjust. And that, and we've always recommended going to the U.S. Government Securities Fund anyway. So anyone making the no-brainer easy conversion, because you're not making a whole lot more money than to now accept the risk of the volatility of that money market fund. There's been a lot of conversion into government funds out of the non-government type money market funds, which has put a little pressure on those types of investments.
So what you're saying is if they have any money invested foreign, then they can't make up the difference?
If it's any money...
You said the foreign one, the foreign investments are not allowed, the companies are not allowed to make up the difference. They have to go mark to market. But domestic ones, they don't necessarily have to.
Oh, it's the difference is if you're U.S. government-based investments or non-government-based. So if you're in a corporate bond equivalent money market,
it has foreign investments.
No, it's still domestic. Okay. Yeah. All right. As long as it's not, I should rephrase that. It's non-U.S. government treasury, let's say, equivalents. So you might be in corporate U.S. corporation, but you're in their short-term commercial paper. That's the stuff that's going to be mark-to-market.
Okay.
You know, it's interesting, you get all of this concern that a money market is going to be valued at less than a dollar. But in the 80s, it happened on a regular basis.
Yes. So interesting how that whole supposition, I guess,
yes,
evolved.
Yeah. Like auction market preferred.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
until the reserve fund broke the buck.
Yeah.
Yes.
But if the economy continues to build as it appears to be going, you know, then eventually that's going to change. You know, even if you're 95% or 94 cents on the dollar, as the economy goes forward and the unemployment stays down and everything else happens, then that's eventually, I would think, it's going to come up. As the interest rates come up and all that, it's going to correct itself.
Sure.
Yeah, and
we wouldn't have had this discussion if rates had been 5%.
Right.
Yeah. The bottom line, at the end of the day, it's highly unlikely that you're going to see anything less than 100 cents on the dollar until we go into another liquidity crisis. And that's a crisis of confidence. So.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's another thing, you know, about, and I'm a firefighter, I'm not a money man, but all this complaining about how low the recovery has been, you know, it's not been as robust as they have been in the past. But to me, I would almost rather have a slower, gradual, you know, instead of the volatility, you know, you have a boom. Oh, we're, you know, making 25% now, and then bust at 18%, so you're actually only at 7%, you know, instead of all the volatility. I don't see what's wrong with a slow, steady, gradual, consistent, honest growth in the economy as opposed to...
The honest is the key word. Unleveraged.
I mean, just coming from somebody who knows nothing about all... how all that stuff works, you know,
well,
I'm not a numbers person,
the business
but
cycle, just, you know, the boom and the bust, you know, the business cycle, we're overdue for the bust business cycle.
Yeah.
Long overdue, and some say it's because of the drawn out, you know, recovery that's just taking longer, but, you know, other camps say, you know, well, is it really a recovery? Because we've pumped so much cash into the marketplace that, you know, remove that, you know, we're busted. We're, you know, trillions of dollars in debt and, you know, artificially
totally
low interest rates and corporations with huge cash on their balance sheets because they just don't know what to do with that money.
there's not really, because it hasn't been, to your point, economically driven.
Right.
There's no, the only bubbles in the current environment are probably dividend paying stock.
Right.
And.
Because you're not seeing those.
Interest rates, but you can't argue the interest rates.
Consumer confidence is arguably better. I don't know really, because, you know, they don't. It's okay, but you're still not seeing the, the robust shopping, first car sales are up, but interest rates are nothing.
Some retailers are reporting fairly strong results currently.
Yeah, and that's been pretty steady.
So it's just, just.
And it's not the back to school buying, it was, it's this last quarter.
It's the last quarter, yeah. So it's just, I think everybody's waiting for the shoe to drop, because you're just really not sure what's necessarily going on. And, wage pressures, as an employer, we're starting to see wage pressure. We've had, kind of trying to dole out raises across the board because things are starting to recover, but revenues are still not keeping pace with expenditures. There's still, there's still a huge deficit there, So it's, I would like to see an economic recovery versus what we've got now.
Good.
An economic slow and steady, that would be good. I'd sign up for that.
Okay, like I said, I'm just, that's just my observation, whether for whatever it's worth. All right, Justin, you have
just a question. What on the Dalton Grenier?
Yes.
What are our breakpoints at to get the lower fee?
They're at 10. I think the first breakpoint is.
Okay, at 10. Okay. I just didn't know what that number was. Just because I saw it on here as there's a breakpoint, but I just didn't know what it was. I'm sure we talked about it before, but
yeah.
I remember discussing it, but I didn't.
I'll tell you that's.
Yeah, because they're at the.
We're at 5.9.
They're at 75. I'm just referencing page 54.
Okay.
List all the fees.
Mm-hmm.
And.
That's 75 basis points.
They're at 75 basis points, which.
Yeah.
That's a decent fee, but. So it would be 75. I believe I have to double check that.
Yeah,
I think it's 75 in the first
town. I was just wondering because I saw it on there. I didn't know.
And then there's a break in the schedule.
Okay. Well, I'm going to table the minutes because I got to work yesterday and I couldn't get on my computer on Saturday, and IT wasn't here to help me fix the problem, so I have to wait until Tuesday before I can get on and manipulate those. So I'm going to table last meeting's minutes, and then we'll approve them at the next meeting.
Did I need to sign anything on the account?
No, it's just the
so.
Chairman and the secretary.
Right, that's what I thought.
So at this time, I would like to, before we go into that, I would like to discuss what we discussed last year with the, or last meeting with the administrative agreement. We need to come to some sort of resolution on that. Do you have that page where, that last page of the agreement that broke down the monies?
I do not with me.
Okay.
That's
one where we were paying, where we pay Alicia's salary and Jessica's salary, and then there's the added 100% or 90% for the pension. That.
I know in total for the year it was $6,200 for the fire portion of my pension.
Okay.
Annually. That's what the final number is.
Right. And then you did mention one thing there too, because I had mentioned at the last meeting that, what was it, as people don't go into the general employees pension plan, they're going to be paying less and less portion of that. I think we pay about 13%.
Mm-hmm. You range between 11 and 12.
11 and 12%, mm-hmm. And then the general employees, the most, and the police pay
General is in the 70th percentile, and police, you guys seem to flip 13, 12, 11, somewhere in that range.
Okay.
Depending on how many go in the drop and stuff, police.
And what I've been told is that that's not necessarily the case, that as people don't go into the general plan, but the only way the general plan's contribution or 70% is going to go down is as people die off.
Yeah, because as active employees leave, they're going to become a retiree number. So they don't, that the general portion won't ever decrease until more people die off, and that's the only way.
But that's just a long and short.
Yeah. Just like the actuary says, you know, it's an actuarial game. All right. So the question was, we're paying her salary plus another almost 100% for her pension.
Correct. Which is what you're currently doing. That's in your current agreement, because it was 96.64% in this fiscal year. Next fiscal year, it's 100%, so it's, you know, a few dollars different year over year. The general pension board, not we, because I'm not on the board, they switched to level dollar funding instead of percentage because, you know, with a closed plan, the percentage of payroll will go up every year. So they switched to level dollar funding for next fiscal year and forward. So the city owes, you know, X amount of dollars per year to keep the plan whole. And we just split that up. And for me to budget it, I just back into a percent so I know how much to put in each fund to cut the check. Council did approve, you know, the general plan's got those triggers. The multiplier dropped to 1. The employee contribution went from 3 to 5%, which is the maximum for employees to contribute. So council did adopt that action. And then the plan is still outside of that funky corridor. So on top of that payment, the city is stroking a check for anything outside the corridor. So we, you know, we still ended up paying extra, but we had a bad actuarial year the past year. So it just kind of, I mean, we were slightly outside the corridor. It was like 0.3, I think, outside the corridor. But, you know, we still got to write a check for that difference.
So by doing the level funding then in banner years for positive actuarial experience, they'll still put in the
down,
same.
Yes, that will pay down that unfunded. And unfunded
pay contribution
down,
and excess, you know, will go to pay the unfunded.
Yes, and the unfunded did go down despite, you know, the poorer year, if you will. Mm-hmm. Our percentage of funding went from 52 to 55. So our unfunded liability went from 98 million to 95 million. So as quirky as the plan design is, it's working. And we were at 104 million at the start of it. So it's, you know, it's working. The level dollar funding will allow us to pay down that unfunded liability within that time frame that it was amortized over. You know, we changed our amortization schedule to, we shortened it. You know, we used to let everything go for 30 years, which was forever. So
okay.
That was a short cycle.
But besides that, I use City of Ocala Electric. Okay. You didn't come to me and say, we're going to raise your rates because 96 people in the electric department decided to stay in the general employees retirement plan, and we have to raise your rates because they stayed in the retirement plan.
No, I didn't raise rates in the electric fund because the electric fund was actually over-collected, so we're in a rebate position right now because the majority of rates in electric
or
are driven by gas.
Or water or anybody. You didn't go all to the water?
Yes, I did.
Or to the garbage people?
Yes,
and say, we're raising your rates because 86 people stayed in the general plan.
Actually, you're not correct. We did raise water rates, and sanitation rates are being raised as well. And stormwater rates were just raised. So we in fact did, but that wasn't purely due to pension costs. Those enterprises have other costs that drive their
rates,
you know, rates and expenses as well. But that's when sanitation happens to be a fund where almost 100% of the employees are in the old plan, so it does drive their cost substantially. But their capital equipment is what's driving right now, because they need at least $1 million a year in replacements, so we have to raise sanitation rates to compensate for that. But 96 to 100% year over year was not a lot dollar-wise. So, no, rates were not raised because you went from 96 to 100%. It was de minimis in the grand scheme of costs.
All right. Well, are you comfortable with paying the extra pension costs?
I don't think there's any alternative, is there?
You take it out of one pocket or the other. But it's got to be paid. All right. So I guess I'd like to entertain a motion to pay the costs of Alicia and associated pension costs as were printed on the as is written and as was printed on the last administration what's it called? Just go ahead.
Administrator.
I mean, is that something that is going to increase every year? One board?
More than likely.
How many years do you have left? Yeah.
Nothing personal.
I'm hoping to leave at 25.
Okay, and is there much possibility that you'll stay longer than that?
She's going to tell me.
I have a life plan, and we'll have to see how it works, but yes, okay. I plan to leave in 2 years. That's why Jessica's here, that's why we're, you know, doing the things that we're doing, but yeah, no, I plan to leave in 2 years.
She's got to put up the door.
Well, I know, and it doesn't make financial sense for her to stay either.
Right, yeah, not as far as, no, not as far as the whole scheme of it, no, it doesn't, but.
Now, and that's not to say, you know, better market returns, yeah, I mean, there's, I can't, you know, if the market does better, the plan does better, our costs don't increase that year.
Right.
So, it's all of actuarial math, you know how that works, actuarial math is interesting at best most years, but. And for me, it's, you know, the cost of doing business. I can't elect to not pay the employees' pensions because it went up. And, I mean, she's a pension employee. It's the cost of doing business. It's, you know, what it is. I mean, she gets raised. That's, you know, above. So, I mean, it's like, you know, we don't want to pay increased pension costs. Well, maybe I don't want to pay increased wage costs. So we just won't give her any raises either. So, I mean, it kind of sucks, but I don't like paying 100%. I hate writing that check every year because it's about $16 million for the city and about $600,000 from the employees. So it's,
well, that should have been less than years ago when someone was telling them different. And
well, and also the biggest part of that is that 3% COLA in perpetuity.
Yeah.
Because, you know, all those employees are going to get, so the year Alicia or anybody in the general plan leaves, that's the lowest check they're ever going to get in their lifetime. So even though she has Part A and Part B, Part B may stay at that 1% if the plan's not doing well, but that Part A check is going up by 3% a year, every single year, till she exits the planet.
Right. So that's why at 25 it doesn't make sense for me to stay at 3% versus stay in my multiplier be 1%.
Yes.
I'm losing 2%.
Right. Or 2% raise, or I'm going to give 3% raise. COLA is.
How they got that through with 5%
boggles my mind. I don't even know who bought that hook, line, and sinker, but somebody did, obviously, because it was here. And that's outrageously expensive. I mean, Social Security's not getting that. There's no pension plan on the planet giving you a guaranteed 3% for life.
Oh, a lot of them do.
It was unsustainable from the beginning, and so it'll, even though we've now not let anybody else get that, if you will, we're still gonna
pay what was approved back then.
I'll make a motion to accept it.
Okay, we're making a motion to accept the administrative services agreement as printed. Second by John Dozier. There's no opposition to unanimous approval. Seeing hearing none, motion carries. Okay, I would like to also, we have three members going into the drought plan. Okay, I would like to entertain a motion to accept entrance into the drop, retirement and entrance into the drop for Scott Abston, Jesus Minor, and John Toms.
Make a motion.
Okay, motion by Justin, second by John. There's no opposition to unanimous approval. Seeing and hearing none, the motion carries. Okay, now we have some schools coming up. There are two schools. One is the one put on by Tallahassee. The first day is for new trustees. It's a pretty good school. It costs nothing. The only thing we do is we'll pay per diem and hotel mileage and that kind of stuff. But the conference is, this one costs nothing. The one in Tallahassee. On Tallahassee call it's a minimal fee, but this one costs nothing. So do you have the dates on that?
I don't.
Okay.
When this is this the one in Orlando?
This is in Orlando, correct.
I thought that was October.
It might be October, but our next meeting is not till November.
Oh, okay.
So I'm just
well, this is September.
The FPPTA is the end of September.
Is that the one in Tallahassee?
26.
No. And the FPPTA is down in
Naples.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, there's the FPPTA school, and then there's the state school.
I haven't gotten any information on the state school yet, so.
Okay.
I need to go to the new trustee school.
All right. I will lend the information, because Tallahassee just, they put one on, but I think they're working on hotel and all the other details that they work on. So I'm not sure that the date has come up, but it's this fall sometime. It's in usually October, but sometimes they change because it's
usually sometime late October, beginning of November in Tampa or Orlando.
Yeah, it's in the central part of the state. So as soon as I'll get a hold of Tallahassee, maybe.
And we'll email you for your social and date of birth, and that is one more security question so that we can register you.
Okay. I'll let you know when the date is on that one. And that's only in Orlando. And the other one is the school in Naples. So if you said you're interested in the Orlando school. Justin, I think you've been to this one before.
The one in Orlando?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that one.
Okay. All right.
Which one, other than the new trustee one, should I attend, if any?
I think that's a good one to start with.
Okay, great.
And then once you do that one, then we'll maybe get you going to the FPPTA, you know, that's the Florida Public Pension Trustees Association, and that one's in September. But if you go to the state school, and then maybe in January or something, you can go to the January, February, they have the other FPPTA. And they have a program there where you can become a certified public pension trustee. And it's got a lot of good information. I mean, they have a really good curriculum. Dave teaches, Dave's heavily involved in PPT.
I'm actually on the education committee board now.
Yes.
So I get to help drive all the curriculum and proctor the rooms and make sure everybody's delivering what they're supposed to do. So. I have the date for the state school. It is November 2 through 4 at the Radisson Celebration Hotel, Orlando.
That's the one in Orlando?
Yeah.
Do we have a meeting? Or
yes, you probably, no.
Do we have our November meeting?
Yeah, it's like the 15th or 16th or 17th.
No, ours is the
14th. 14th,
and then
on the third floor.
I think it's the 14th because we're going to find another room for this board.
Okay.
Because the general is also
the 14th is a Monday.
Mm-hmm. Is that Veterans Day?
The general was moving their meeting?
No, we're gonna do dual. Fire is going to meet in the finance conference room, and I'm gonna have a laptop. So Jessica's gonna do the general, I'm gonna do the fire.
God, how am I supposed to be able to bring me in jail and kill me?
Take it off your body, here, and get it off your body and go up there.
Yes, that, with it being, you know, veterans and this, that, and the other. And then the next week was Thanksgiving week.
Oh, yeah, we wouldn't have.
Yeah.
Because the investment committee is the 7th, that.
It might be the.
Yeah.
No, yeah, it's gonna be the 2nd, or.
The 7th, because the 2nd is Wednesday.
Okay.
The Orlando school is,
2nd through 4th.
Who sponsors that?
So that, that's the Florida school?
That would be one that I would attend.
Yeah.
It's real, it's real good.
The Division of Retirement, up in Tallahassee, they put on 2 schools a year. They put on the one in the fall, and it's usually Tampa, Orlando, Central Florida somewhere. And then in the, spring, they put on a school up in Tallahassee. And that's the Division of Retirement. It's a good school.
Randy, I may attend that one.
Okay.
In Orlando, and that's because the state report is going to be electronic. And they're supposed to have a couple hours as to how to do it, where to get the information. But I want to wait to hear, because, you know, they told us they'll have education or something before, or a webcast or whatever, and they didn't have it, they didn't follow through with it. So there's supposed to be some training before, but if not, they said they'd have it at that November meeting, or that fall meeting.
Well, I'm going to entertain a motion to approve Alicia and Jessica to go pay our portion. When they go to school, we only pay 14% of their school, or whatever the percentage is, to attend the FPPTA and potentially the state school in November. Because the annual report is done on paper every year, and they are gonna convert it to electronic. So it's good that she's there and that she can act, because Julie Browning and all the people who do the state reports show up to these meetings, so she can be one-on-one with.
If they have it ready. I mean, it's not due until March, so if they don't have it ready, then.
Okay.
I won't bother with it.
As I said, potentially for that school as well. I'd like to entertain a motion for them to go to the one school and potentially the 2nd school.
So moved.
Okay, motion by John Dozier, second by Justin. There's no opposition to a unanimous approval. Seeing, hearing, none, the motion carries.
So the September school's in Naples?
Yes.
Yeah.
And we don't have a date, actually. We don't have a date for that yet?
Yes, we do have a date for the September. Do you know, you got the FPT, when is the FPPTA?
Yeah.
Okay.
26th to the 28th.
I think that's right.
Sunday through Wednesday.
I've been going and gotten 500 emails.
So if you want to go, let me know. We booked a couple of rooms, but, they go quick.
Yeah, that one sold out fast. So that one's September 25th through the 28th at the Hyatt Regency Coconut Point, Bonita Springs.
Which is just, Bonita Springs is just north of Naples a little bit.
Yeah, that's a really nice one.
It's a nice venue, yeah, I'm going to that. All right. I mean, if you wanted to, John, if you wanted to go to that one too, you can do that, so.
I don't want to put the horse before the cart.
Okay, all right. Well, I think it's better to take a slower approach and do the state school, and they have a really good new trustees, so.
You do understand the analogy of drinking water out of a fire hose?
Yes.
You get that reference, Andy?
I get it.
Trustees, you certainly get thrown into the pan.
All right, any other questions or comments or anything? Okay, with no Robert's rules, do we need a motion to adjourn, or?
NIADA boards do not, no.
Okay, with no further business, the meeting is adjourned at 10:18.